so we ask you.
Okay, Honorable Deputy Minister, do you want to say something before we get the presentation?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to you and the Honorable members here, to the senior officials, and to the public, general public that's here. Honorable Chairperson, I am here today, and I have been made aware that there were some people who really sorely missed my absence last week, and I apologize for that, but as you know, I am quite a regular here. Chairperson, as you have indicated in your opening statement, NERSA was meant to have given us this presentation a few weeks back, and they requested that this be postponed for a number of reasons that they will outline themselves today in terms of what they needed to have concluded first before they come here, so that they don't come and give you a half story, but rather they give you a comprehensive brief around what the delay was about, what the issues are, how they've resolved them. And of course, the most important one is the conclusions around the application by ESCOM. As everybody in this committee is aware, ESCOM was supposed to have actually made an application for a multi-year price determination number 4, which did not happen, and they forwarded reasons to ESCOM to NERSA why that did not happen. And I think it will be part of the presentation in terms of explaining what those issues were, how NERSA is dealing with them. And I think more importantly, just an issue around where we are in terms of electricity, the affordability issues that come up, and the related issues in terms of ESCOM itself and the way forward. I think without further ado, Chairperson, I know it is your responsibility and you welcome people, but I'm happy to see some members of the gallery who are here, and some have actually admitted that they are here because there is nice coffee here. There is no coffee in some of the other committees that are competing with us. So I would really want to welcome them there. I think we'll make sure that there's always coffee so they can be here. With your permission, Chairperson, maybe we can then ask the full-time regulator members here to make the presentation. Thank you.
I can confirm I was present when one member spoke about the call. I was informed that there are matters that arose in relation to ESCOM last week during the presentation. I know we've had this discussion in the past. Deputy Minister always says that when you call the entities, you must call the man. So I just want to mention that because of the relationship between what NERSA is doing and the issues that have now arisen in relation to ESCOM, that we will have to call them here soon, just in relation to these matters. And I don't know what that is that I wrote last week. So of course we will do it the way that the Deputy Minister always suggests. So the question doesn't arise whether we can call ESCOM here or not. We will call them here and they will come. So it's an issue of our communication with the EOP in the process of getting them here. So that the issues that pertain this application that have got to do with ESCOM itself, we can deal with them when we see ESCOM. So that today we can just focus on the energy regulation. So thanks for the opening remarks, Minister. Dr. Matala, you insist on making opening remarks. Go ahead. Thank you, Honorable Chair, our Minister, my colleagues, officials of the department, and NERSA, and the public in general. The matter I want to raise, Chair, is not on the agenda. It's a very serious matter because it happened last week in the portfolio committee. But immediately after we've done with the issues relating to the IPP, the Honorable Matala was attacked by an official from ESCO. His name, I'm told, I don't even know his name. I'm told it's Mr. Malifan. And what is it, PLO? Oh, yes, Parliamentary Liaison Officer of ESCO. Because these things happened in the committee, I wanted to bring to the attention of this committee that we must deal with this matter seriously. So, because I'm not here to represent an individual or my jacket. I'm here to represent the people of South Africa. And I was sent by these people to come and address some of the needs and the interests of these people, 54 million people. And I was insulted by that member, the Mr. Malifan. I don't know if it's Mr. Malifan, but I was told that it's Mr. Malifan. How can an official and an PLO attack a member of parliament who is executing his duties? Eh? I'm here to work. I'm not here to sleep. I'm not here to make friends either with the minister or the department. The two of us were here to execute our task. So I wanted this committee to take a decision on this matter, Chair. Because that day, you remember, I called you and said, this is what happened in the committee. As I was leaving, my witness is Mr. Honorable Mr. Mabunda. Immediately after the meeting, while I was approaching the lift, somebody grabbed me to say, the issues you are raising, Mr. Banana, does not arise. And he was just insulting me. Because I'm a grown-up and a member of the ANC, I didn't want us to cause the chaos in front of everybody, but I felt there will be a committee where I'm going to raise this matter because it happened in the portfolio committee. I felt this unparliamentary, Chair, to be insulted by a member, at the PLO, that the issues we are raising the committee matter are uncalled for. I was raising some serious issues that affect the people of South Africa, but after that, I was insulted because I made mention of ESCO. Of course, I was hard on ESCO. And I'm told after that no, that man is representing ESCO in all the committees, public enterprise and the Department of Energy. And I whether consulted a number of members of parliament here in parliament, and I was told that this gentleman, that behavior of him is not happening today in this committee. It does, it's used to insult other members of the public enterprise committees. Members of Parliament. So I would want us, Chair, to take a decision on this matter. Either way, we write to the Speaker and say, this member, this man, Malifan, must be banned from attending the Portfolio Committee meetings, this one, the Department of Energy. If he continuously come here, Chair, I will embarrass him in front of everybody. Because I was not sent by him. If he wants to be a politician, let him go and make sure that he become a politician on his own right. We are not denying him to be a politician. He must go and be a politician where he comes from.
And when it comes to parliament, you must respect this parliament. Insulting a member of parliament, you are insulting the chair and the committee and the speaker of parliament. So in terms of the law, chair, and the regulation, that for sure, we must write to the speaker and say, this is what happened in the previous meeting. Mr. Malifan and the PLO insulted Mr. Matala on this day. Record meetings, of course, even though they are not recorded. But we'll say in this meeting where we're dealing with the IPP, must write to the speaker and complain to her that this is what expired after our meeting with the IPP, so that the Speaker of Parliament must take a decision on this matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to support what Honorable Fabio said. A formal complaint should be forwarded to on your desk so that you go through it. Maybe we will have questions with Mr. Matala, maybe to clarify where you would not be able to understand, so that from there, take it forward. I think it's good that you raised execution of the matter should start from the death position.
Thank you very much. Okay. Honorable Matala, we'll attend to this matter. I'll have a discussion with you after this meeting. Indeed, you did tell me about what occurred last week. I don't want to prejudge the matter, but I do take serious exception that the members of parliament must be whether in session or outside session of committees be spoken to in a manner that is unbecoming. I'll attend to this matter. I'm definitely sure a decision will be made soon with regard to this particular. So I suggest that we close the matter and take the presentation please rest assured we'll deal with the matter. So Mr. Porter wants to give us the apologies. Mr. Porter.
Thank you, Chair. Following apologies to Mr. Banda, who is attending the ET on Public Enterprises meeting this morning, and then also an apology from Mr. Kennedy. Those are the apologies.
Understand there was something that was supposed to be understood.
But anyway, next I can start with your presentation. Who's going to start? Please go ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Honorable Deputy Minister of Energy, colleagues with me here, the public representatives. With me today from NERSA side is Mr. Chris Foley, who is a full-time recruiter member, also a CEO. I've got Zaitu Kabika from the Office of the CEO, Mr. Brian Soto, as well as the Rumo Masike, who are in the electricity regulation division. Without any further ado, proceed with the presentation. Hopefully, I'll be able to deal with everything within the allocated time frame. On the slide 2, 6 to outline the legislative framework that provides us with the empowerment to regulate the industry. And I think it's important to also note that there are these key published policies which inform the regulation process. The National Energy Regulator Act requires that NERSA regulate according to published government policy. We've got the Electricity Regulation Act, number 4/2006, whose objects include achieving efficient, effective, sustainable, and orderly development of the electricity supply industry in South Africa, safeguarding and meeting the interests and requirements of present and future customers and users, also facilitating investment and electricity, as well as promoting what we term the energy mix, energy efficiency, competitiveness, and customer choice, and also providing a fair balance between the interests of customers, licensing, investors, and the public at large. When we then look at the functions of the prescribed in the Electricity Regulation Act, I won't go through them one by one, but it's important to note that as a regulator, we need to be able to set the tariff and prices and do that in line with promoting efficiency. On slide 5, I deal with issues of regulation of electricity prices and tariffs, which Act Section 4A2 says that the regulator must regulate prices and tariffs, and Section 15(1)(a) says that you must enable an efficient licensee to recover the full cost of his license activity, including reasonable margin or return. And that is also informed by the fact that the electricity pricing policy includes, among others, that there must be cost-reflective tariffs. And also avoid undue discrimination between customer categories while permitting cross-subsidy of tariffs to special classes of customers, noting that electricity is used by the poorest of the poor in our country, and therefore important to cushion them against the price peak. When it comes to the regulation of electricity prices on slide 6, Honorable Chair, is that there is a revenue requirement methodology that we use, which is in terms of Section 15(1)(a) of the Electricity Regulating and Regulation Act. This methodology, which is based on a multi-year price determination, which current period is 5 years, from 2013-14 to 2017-18. This run is called now, and we must move to the fourth one in terms of NYPD4. And the application that ESCOM put forth from our side was being requested not to go for the 5 years of multi-year tariff, price determination, apply for 1 year for 18-19 financial year. They cited the reason for their request being the pending integrated resource plan, the IRP, as well as the pending update of the integrated energy plan. The fact that they had a shortfall of about 3 gigawatt shortfall, but now they are in a situation where they've got excess capacity in certain hours of the day. And then the utilization also of ESCOM generation capacity needed to be reconsidered, as indications reflected the need to put into cold reserve mothball or decommission several of the power stations, which would have a far-reaching economic and socio-economic implication. Furthermore, there was this whole issue of the independent power producers, which needed to be resolved with government, as well as ESCOM's responsibility for the procurement of the nuclear bill program. They put those forth, and we deemed that sufficient for us to consider only the one-year tariff application. And in terms of that, we'll continue to apply the formula as provided here, which talks of the allowable revenue being determined by the expense as per the formula provided. Then this is then the return that is expected on the asset, being where in the formula, as you see, we've got the value of qualifying property, plant and equipment, which forms the regular asset base. Then from that, you remove the accumulated depreciation and add the working capital, and then you multiply that by the weighted average cost of capital. I must stress, Honorable Chair, that in that formula, the first element, two elements, talking to what is going to happen in the future, the forthcoming one, so it's a forecast. The other one, which is the RCA, the regulatory clearing account, this is more of a clawback, where if cost has been forecast in such a manner that it will come under or above that, we are able then to claw back in our favor if they've not reached those, I mean, incurred those costs to that level, or when they've incurred more costs, then we are able to, they are able to claw back in their favor. We are not able to process the RCA for the past 3 years, and ESCOM has submitted an application for that. The RCA, which currently we're talking of a figure of around their application, 66 billion for the 3 years. And then we've already published a discussion document in that regard, and we're going to be engaging by the in May. We'll have public hearings, and then we conclude the matter. We seek to conclude the matter soon as within, we initially estimated that we're going to finish around August, end of August, but we have noting the situation that they are also in, and the fact that that is in their favor, we are seeking to expedite that such that we are able to finish that before the end of June this year. This is just on the issue of the regulatory clearing. I just wanted to make that one clear. The cost this formula is further expanded upon on page on slide 7. Which slide illustrates the regulatory return, which is based on the weighted cost of capital for ESCOM, and the on that allowable the regulatory asset base. And then you add there the primary energy cost, which would be the fuel used in generating electricity, mainly the coal, the diesel, especially for OCGTs, and nuclear fuel, etc. And then the cost for the sourcing energy from independent power producers, which is purchased from this IPP. And then the depreciation of assets being amortized at the expected economic life of the asset. Then the other one is the integrated demand management cost. You will note when we get to this cost in terms of the analysis that we have not included integrated demand management, because what is happening right now is that they got excess capacity especially in certain hours of the day, as I've already allocated that. Then we include the operating costs, which are incurred in the production and supply of electricity. That will include manpower costs, repairs, maintenance, and administrative costs. Then the issue of government taxes and levies, which will include the levies that are imposed on electricity by government that are treated as pass-through costs. That also includes the environmental levy, which is imposed as we speak, Then then you, there's an issue of the RCA, as I've already alluded to that issue, Honourable Chair and Honourable Member. That then gives us the revenue allowed for collection by us, by ESCOM, from this customer. In terms of the decision for 2018-19 tariff, is that ESCOM has requested that in terms of the application, the price increase of 19.9% from one of the previous years, and we have approved at the moment, we have approved the 5.23%. This, if you want to look at it in terms of the price build-up, of the build-up of that decision, there's also the issue that it brings us closer to the sales speed. But what has been happening? Because the price has been keeping on increasing. We'll also demonstrate that towards the end, graphically. That as the price are going up, what has happened is that the demand has actually gone down. And what has happened is that they have not been able to recover the kind of rebate that they forecast to recover. So we think that this decision will also assist in terms of closing that gap, and also in making sure that we don't have a lot of increase in terms of what just comes up right for. I will try to move quickly so that we can give enough time for engagement in terms of questions. Moving to slide 9, where we talk of the allowable revenue by cost element. In terms of the revenue, the return, which then talks to the issue of the margin on the asset. That is the first element of the formula, which is informed by the weighted average cost of capital. That applied for the 22 billion, but we then adjusted it in terms of the applicable weighted average cost of capital for them, which we find to be around 5.27, and then we gave them 28 billion in that regard. The expenditure, there was a decrease in the expenditure by 11 billion, which brought it to 51. And then the primary energy, we talked to that because they had in their submission application, they had taken out an arena power station and put it on cold reserve. And from our side, looking at the efficiency, we also included in that Arnold power station. Not that you are saying that Arnold is going to be shut down. I just want to make that one clear. Is that when it is on in the formula, put on cold reserve, is that it will then, they will still have to do maintenance to still work on it, but it's not that it's going to be fully or operational attack because of the higher cost that are involved in that particular power station. So that we include over and above and resulting in the reduction as well as also making sure that there is efficiency in terms of the pricing of coal. The open cycle gas turbine, what we have done there is that those OCGT, noting that there is already excess capacity, we said they are not going to be putting them on, looking at the very high price of running those on DC, hence that decrease of 346 million. We also noted a decrease in terms of the independent power producers, notwithstanding the events, the recent events, as well as what would have taken place today in terms of the signing thereof. We're of the view that even if the signing was going to go ahead, those IPPs would not have come into operation within the 18-19 period, and therefore there was no need for us to be able to include them. In the issues of depreciation, that also comes in because in the formula we have taken out Arnold. I've already spoken to the issue of the demand management, that the excess capacity also requires that they do not engage on those projects. In other words, they were always in the upside position of asking end users, customers, not to buy their products. But now I think things are turning the other way around. They are behaving like any normal business that will ask people to buy from them. The levies and taxes, the increase there is because of that, the use of coal instead of the IPP, so contributing to the environmental need. That is what is in the cost element. And the next slide, Honourable Chairperson, will remember, Minister is that it seeks to then break down the price, which is that 93.79 cents per kilowatt hour. That you note that the expenditure, the highest contributor, then the primary energy, as well as the independent power producers, including the depreciation and the return. On your right of the slide is just a graphical presentation of that 93.79. We have not included the return there just so that you can get a bit bigger and be able to be viewed from far. So that is what we have in terms of the contribution. And then when one goes to slide 11, that slide seeks to just provide a breakdown of the price, that is just presenting it differently in terms of the percentage contribution of these in that pie chart. As you note, Honorable Chair, that primary energy as well as the other expenses are the main contributors in terms of having the cost reflective tariff. The next one then zooms in into primary energy. In terms of primary energy, I need to just explain a little bit on that particular slide for clarity. There is a primary energy category that is listed on the far left. Then this the first column. The second column deals with the ESCOM application, the initial application that was published. And then there were engagements between ESCOM and the regulator, which then resulted in the adjustments that I indicated there. In terms of the coal usage, those were changed in line with the coal grid in terms of how, with the energy grid, in terms of how they must split the sources of energy, the utilization of the various facilities for power generation, and then ending up with the what we got there as the fourth column, which talks to the NERSA revised cost. These are, one can maybe look at them as NERSA ESCOM adjusted or agreed upon inputs into the application. Once it is sitting in the application, then NERSA started then to assess that application. And in assessing the application, there was a reduction on the coal usage in terms of by 10 billion, resulting to 39.1 billion in the final decision. There was an increase in the coal usage in terms of not using the IPPs, but there was also a decrease that was also informed by the price of coal in terms of better sourcing of the coal, as well as taking ANOT out of the formula. Then there was this net coal obligation, which they had about 1.3 billion from their side. We removed those because those came about due to take-or-pay contracts that they had with the mining houses. And if there were no delays, they would not have paid for those things, like coal that they never used. So we saw it as not in line with what the Act allows in terms of being an efficient operator. Because had they operated efficiently, we would not have had those challenges. The other minor ones also that come in there are coming in like the water usage, because of more use of coal in general, then it's got more water that you then consume, because the process itself uses a lot of water in terms of steam generation for in turn power generation. Same with the gas and oil, you not using OCGTs also being a factor there, hence the reduction. Like what we left unused is the solvent usage. That solvent is actually more limestone that is used to reduce emissions to the atmosphere in line with the good environmental responsibility from their side. So that one, for example, we left unchanged, as well as Honorable Chairperson, you see the environmental levy that we increase it instead of reducing it because of the increased usage of coal and the need also to be aware in terms of the negative impacts on the environment. The IPP, as I've already alluded to, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, even if the bid window 3 and 4 are signed, they won't be in operation within the time period being considered. Hence, we end up with an 85.3 billion that is for primary energy. When it comes to the expenditure, I think as in the newspapers, a lot has also been said in the media in general around the issues of ESCOM, the employment, the employee ratios, and all those things. In terms of the cost, the benefits to the employees, there was a reduction of about 3.8 billion, resulting in a 24 billion in the final. And then with the same with maintenance, as well as other costs that we had to reduce, as well as corporate services, which must include costs that are prudent taking care. So it's part of the prudency that we looked into. So the expenditure line item has been adjusted downwards by 11.1 billion. The major adjustment was made on this employee benefit cost, and that's of the view that ESCOM needs to control its costs better. The next one, dealing with depreciation, we ESCOM applied for a depreciation of 29.1 billion, and NESA approved the 24.9 billion. The generation depreciation was adjusted downwards to reflect the MYPD3 revaluation fee value. Tendrin and Arnott are not included in the registered asset base, also resulting in a general reduction on the depreciation. And then ESCOM is allowed a return on assets that are in use. When it comes to slide 15, this just seeks to demonstrate that the sales forecast of ESCOM have actually come short in terms of those things. As you'll appreciate, since 2009, going down, we have given them more minute arrival ribbon on the basis of more sales that are coming through. But what has happened, because with the prices going up, some of the customers have also tried to find alternative means. Because what happens is that relative in a short term, energy and electricity, they become price inelastic because it's a given. If you are using electricity now, you must do something else to change that so that there can be a marked difference. But over time, people then start to also look at alternatives, and then of course this reduction in price, in demand. So with the sales, their sales have been lower than what they forecasted. And the next slide seems just to demonstrate the fact that we've been having a situation where prices are going up as we are sitting now roughly, let's say, 1883, and then we've got the demand of the same actually going down. So as you get this kind of difference, it then results on the fact that ESCOM doesn't recoup the revenue that they forecast. You will note when I come to slide 17, which demonstrates that one can say roughly we've got a 10% shortage in terms of the revenue. They are below the revenue that they is approved by NESA. So they consistently recoup less than what was allowed in the past 4 years. Then going to the analysis of the major costs, which include the primary energy as well as operating costs and capital expenditure on slide 18. Note that from 2014 to date, there's been a constraint in terms of revenue collection. Their cost has been increasing by an annual average of 16%. And ESCOM's biggest cost overrun has been on their capital expenditure, meaning that they then were, came below what they had antique forecast in terms of the remaining to recoup as the costs are going higher and higher. So in conclusion, I'll say that ESCOM has perpetually failed to collect the Dalagu revenue, while its expenditure has continued to exceed that determined by the energy regulator. The continued increases in tariff has seen commensurate decreases in consumption, which have attributed to this affordability limit having been reached by its customers in a depressed economic environment and a stagnant economy. So we've got a vicious cycle. Some also refer to it as a utility debt, I mean like a debt spiral, as you need to increase the tariff so you can be able to recoup the cost. But at the same time, when you increase the tariff, then you've got a problem in terms of the sales that you are then able to recoup from. To break this cycle, it's important for ESCOM to either reduce its cost, including its fixed cost base, and hence its allowable revenue requirement whilst growing its sales volume, thereby driving these tariffs to their most efficient level. This should result in smaller tariff increases going forward that will attract additional sales volume that will result in even smaller tariff increases going forward. And we believe that the 5.23% has to drive it in that direction. And I must, maybe in conclusion, Honorable Chairperson or member, state that it's not that one is not taking too for instance the sustainability of ESCOM. I think one has looked at all the factors, and I think our intention to also expedite the evaluation of RCA seeks also to be able to address the fact that this is an amount that is due to them very much to be speedily, taking due cognizance of all the issues that are pertaining to ESCOM. And we are not necessarily a regulator or about ESCOM, but it is in the nature of the industry that we've got more or less a monopoly in this instance. So it may appear to people as if it's all about ESCOM, whereas it's about the whole electricity industry in the country. With that, Honorable Chairperson, you know, member, Honorable Deputy Minister, thank you.
And
Madam Lehuma Masike, also from the Electricity Pricing Department. And then we've got also departmental officials. And Zetu, I nearly miss Zetu Kabila. She's the lady next to the CEO, from the CEO.
The numbers, no. Okay, thanks. Honourable members, there is the presentation. Lots of questions. So, Deputy Minister, I don't know who's going to answer this question. Under conclusions there, we see that thing that says, in order to break this vicious cycle, ESCOM must do certain things. So I suppose that the regulator can only conclude that in our view this is what ESCOM must do, but somebody else must deal with this. This is my, I'm just noting that in my view, everything considered, we won't have to return to that thing. So that's in my final analysis. So things are going to get better. Okay. Let Honorable Fagu, Honorable Esteban.
Yeah.
What are you doing that side? Oh, okay. You number two, and then followed by Honorable Davis. Honorable Kada, and Honorable Mabunda. You don't have to raise your hand. I wasn't here last week, so I want to hear you speak, all of you, and Honorable Matan. Yeah, I'm here now, Honorable Tara. So can you please speak? Honorable Fagu.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson, I understand where the regulator comes from and their final decision, their own perspective, and wanting to end the vicious cycle and so on. I understand. I think it's sensible and reasonable. But my question, my curiosity is the impact of this decision from ESCOM perspective. Thank you.
So the impact of allowing less than what ESCOM applied?
Yes, and the implication of that when it comes to ESCOM.
That's it. On our agenda.
Mzana, thank you, Chair, Honorable Deputy Minister, and thank you for the presentation. I'm going to start, as I made notes, page 5, why NERSA is actually here, you know, apart from the things mentioned.
Where's the mic on our
way? Use this one.
It's not working also. Chair, thank you. NERSA's mandate also, we were initially formed to regulate monopoly for the public good. And I'm going to come back to that now. on page 13, where we speak about the various costs and the things, you nurse are calculated that the supposedly staff in Eskom or staff needed on the amount of capacity that Eskom generates. That's how you calculate the staff. The problem is that Eskom generates cost per person is nearly 8 gigawatts per hour. That's if you work it out with their staff complement. Now they budgeted now for 5.3 gigawatts per hour, which would make it an overstaffing of nearly 4 billion rand. NERSA approved 24.3 billion rand for employee-related costs. Eskom requested 28.2 billion rand. That's 13.8% less. But that doesn't really make sense. If you take the figures of Mr. Jabu Mabuza, the new chairman of Eskom, in consideration, he said that Eskom's got 41,800 workers and there's only 14,200 needed. That's 66%. Not 13.8, 66% over. So how does Eskom staff numeration and staffing levels per unit of energy delivered compare with the metrics of other comparable benchmark utilities? And it's quite obvious that the incompetence of Eskom management have caused massive reputable damage to the energy supply of South Africa. I'm going to go to the other point that I've got. Further, how does NERSA calculate their special pricing agreement with Eskom, for one, for example, with Saldana Steel, with BHP Billiton, I think is the other one. What special arrangements have you got to form that we, the taxpayers, must pay for? What is the arrangement with Eskom, what you've given them? Who else pays for it? Who else pays for the mismanagement and the corruption and the things but the taxpayers? I see on page 15, Eskom sales forecast. Eskom sales forecast to show a positive graph like this, it's mind-boggling. For every few percent that Eskom put their price up, their demand drops by 10% or more. Now Eskom must find new roads to afford their ever-spending costs. The government, for one, has on so many frequently cited South Africa's renewable energy program as a shining example of how industrialization can work in this country and how it is good and how good it is and how much foreign interest it absorbs. Now, how can we have a situation in South Africa where the unions are holding this Department of Energy, this country, the ransom? You know, really, Chair, I don't understand it. We also, for one, Eskom has borrowed now from our pension fund, from government's pension fund. Has that been paid back with interest? You know, a couple of years ago, the pension fund set, or PIC that managed it, set at 1.6 billion rand. They could cover their liability by more than 120-something percent. That's less than 79% now. And that's our pension money. Less than 79% now. The return on equity dropped from 7.5 to minus 2.9%. Your money, Chair, my money, our pension fund. Why does Regulation 28, that was specially formulated, specially created to protect retirement funds, not, how does NERSA, let us come back to your monopoly, or your mandate, not protect this? You know, government entities, SOEs, standing owing government 460-something billion rand. It's really scary. It's scary for every one of us that works for government. It must be. NIRSA developed IPP programs, one of my notes, just my own brain, procurement policies and release feed-in tariffs for that. Where are we standing with that for IPP programs? Where is NIRSA standing with that? The RE IPP procurement, how does it affect NIRSA's decisions on this? Lastly, my note, Eskom is trapped in this classic utility death spiral of rising prices, declining sales, and the volumes that they rely on NIRSA and government bailouts to stay afloat is absolutely no longer affordable and permissionable by us. Eskom's demand declined basically daily. And we've said previously, and also in this department, we sometimes speak about Eskom, and sometimes we're not allowed to speak about Eskom. Sometimes other ministers run Eskom, sometimes we. We must do oversight, but we don't really have a say on Eskom. Eskom is the biggest spender, the biggest waster of money in the country. But this is the Department of Energy, Chair. And through mismanagement, corruption, and blatant incompetence, Eskom was identified as one of the major threats in South Africa's fiscal future. And I, for one, and my party, cannot accept it. Or any increases for Eskom, for the reward them for their mismanagement. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to the Deputy Minister for being with us, and thank you, very much, and I hope you're better. And thank you very much to NIRSA. I think that we should commend NIRSA for standing strong in the face of Eskom's application for a 20% tariff increase. I think we all know that that would have hit the consumer particularly hard, especially with the new VAT increase that's on the cards and the new fuel levy. And I think a 20% tariff hike would have really been the icing on the cake for the South African public. So we'd like to commend NIRSA for standing very firm on that. I'd just like to first of all get an update on the port review that Eskom is considering to contest the tariff decision. It was reported in January that Eskom was considering going to court. Has Eskom communicated anything to NIRSA in this regard? And if Eskom did go to court, what would happen to the new tariffs? Would they go ahead, or would they be effectively interdicted? If you could give us a sense of what would happen in that scenario. On page 29 of the longer document that we received by email, the reasons for decision, you talk of the utility death spiral, which my colleague just referred to. And it's defined as when a utility needs to recover costs from an ever-diminishing customer base and declining sales, and this is a vicious cycle. Now, I think NIRSA is correct in that document when they argue that increasing tariffs will only speed up the death spiral. So obviously what Eskom needs to do is contain its costs. Could you tell us exactly what you would recommend to Eskom to do to reduce its costs instead of increasing its tariffs? And has this been communicated to Eskom? Also in that same report, the Reasons for Decision report, there's an interesting debate that's put out on the pages about the elasticity or inelasticity of electricity pricing. And it says that Eskom says the price of electricity is inelastic, but NIRSA says that it is elastic. And you say that it's elastic because, first of all, consumers can choose to consume less. They can also choose to generate their own electricity if they have the means to do that. They can go off the grid. Or big firms can move their plants to other countries where the price of electricity is cheaper. And I think those are all very sound arguments that electricity is in fact price elastic. So your arguments appear solid, but you don't say in your report what Eskom's arguments were for saying that electricity is inelastic. Could you tell us what were ESCOM's arguments that electricity is price inelastic? Then also in that reasons of decision report, mention is made of the pending update of the integrated resource plan, and that is cited as a key reason for the opt-out from the multi-year price determination, the five-year, I believe, multi-year determination, and the opting for a one-year period instead. Now, the new IRP was supposed to be gazetted by the end of February. That was announced by Minister Kubayi. Minister Mashlobo brought it forward to December, but as it happens, we haven't seen the IRP gazetted yet, and that IRP is not in the public domain, and we're now in March. And we heard from the DG of the Department of Energy last week that the IRP might go back to Cabinet for further discussion, because apparently, from what he told us, there was lots of contestation in that Cabinet meeting in, I think it was in November or December, over the IRP. So where does this leave us going forward with the multi-year price determination? Does it mean that if a decision is not reached on the IRP soon, that we will have to forego the MYPD and opt for another one-year review period? Then you mentioned a lot of the inefficiencies of ESCOM as a reason for the increasing in costs. Have you also calculated the cost of corruption at ESCOM? My colleague mentioned corruption. I think as we speak, there is another committee that is dealing with state capture, and we've all read about just how far the rot went at ESCOM in terms of state capture and the corruption of that state-owned entity. Have you calculated the cost of corruption and what could be saved going forward if ESCOM manages to eliminate those levels of corruption that we've seen in the last couple of years? Then, Chair, I noticed that in the presentation that we received today and that was presented to us on the PowerPoint is not exactly the same as the presentation that we received by email. And in fact, there's two slides missing from the presentation that we received by email. And I would just like to try and get a handle on why those slides were removed from the presentation. So the two slides in question were on the costs of various technologies. And the first slide, I think it was originally slide 11, was the average cost per kilowatt if you substituted all IPPs with coal. And then the second slide was the average cost per kilowatt if you substituted renewable energy IPPs with coal. And I would just like to know, Chair, why were these two slides removed from the presentation? I hope I'm not making a mistake, but as I checked it earlier, that wasn't on the board. But if I'm correct, there were two slides removed from the presentation. So I would like to know, why were the two slides removed from the presentation? And did anybody send a request from outside of NERSA to have these two slides removed from the presentation? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. My first question is around regulatory clearing account, where the gentleman mentioned that for the past 3 years it could not be processed to ESCOM. I'm not sure if I heard correctly, but he also mentioned an amount of 66 billion rands and the fact that there will be public hearings which will start, I think, in May, and you want to complete by October. I just want more information with regards to that and whether perhaps at the committee we can get just a brief summary around this RCA, and what are the implications with the fact that for the past 3 years nothing has happened, and with reference to that 66 billion rand you mentioned earlier on. And then in terms of price increase, I see a big difference from Eskom with 19.90% and NERSA 5.23%. And I want to concur with my colleague to ask what are the implications and what is going to happen with this difference of price. And I want to make a reference to page, I think it's page 5. Oh, okay, I think I said page 5, with reference to the legality or what is expected of NERSA versus to what Eskom is supposed to deliver. And then the other one is on page 11, on that breakdown of price. I just want to propose that instead of putting the percentage, I think next time just put the percentage together with the amount, because sometimes, you know, the percentage is very confusing. I don't know 0.25, how much is that? So I think in future, you know, otherwise we just have to bring the calculators here, additions, subtractions, and addition to come to those percentages. So if we can put the figures instead and also the percentage. And then page 12, water usage. You said yourself that you're using a lot of water. And as you can see that South Africa, we are getting to a water scarce country. What measures have you put in place to make sure that you're coming up with initiatives that will save water? And not only water, I mean the money that you're using, there's quite a lot of money. Perhaps you can also save in terms of money. And you said yourself that Eskom needs to control its cost better. And my colleagues have already alluded to this point. And perhaps I would also like to know, what is it? Because you keep on saying Eskom must do this, but you don't come with a plan to say if Eskom can do the following. So I'm also very much interested. And also on on page 19, in your conclusion, you mentioned quite a lot of things that Eskom is doing so wrong, which are very serious in my view. But again, you're not giving us the way forward to say if Eskom can consider the following. So it's like you're blaming Eskom all the time, but you're not coming up with a solution to resolve those problems. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, to the Minister, and thanks for the presentation. Through you, Chairperson, I just want to get it clear from NERSA to confirm or to deny that you have conducted a public consultation with regard to the application by ESCO. I think that is correct. Okay, thanks. Now, the public consultation, are you referring to individuals or are you referring to stakeholders? And if you are referring to stakeholders, which ones are those ones? Because I'm tired of hearing about the advertisement on the newspaper. In a very small letters at the corner of the newspaper, which our people in the rural areas do not have, perhaps, an opportunity to read the newspapers. Can you put up the type of stakeholders or consultation that you have run? You started your consultation on the 30th of October and lasted until the 20th of November. Do you think the time frame given, is it sufficient enough to say you can come up with a conclusion that you made in your presentation? And at the same time, Chairperson, the decision was made on the 15th of December 2017. Still, I'm questioning the time frame. Was the time enough for you to engage ESCOM and analyze about your findings during your consultation or consultative processes? Lastly, Chairperson, I think you know that ESCOM is still studying your findings. To say now you have concluded, or maybe you have submitted your findings and concluded that ESCOM to better the situation, they should do 1, 2, 3. Have they concluded about their decision or analyzing your consultation inputs? Now, if they have not yet concluded, are you not running ahead of their of their sitting? Maybe they will come up with different things with regard to your conclusion and submission. So I just want to understand that in that regard, Chairman. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Our Honourable Deputy Minister, last week you were not in our committee meetings, but you have apologized and you have accepted the apology. I'm happy that since the establishment of this committee, you are there almost every meeting, you are there. And we are happy, we thank you, Minister, for being with us, even during difficult times. You are with us to guide us so that we can be able to achieve what we are here for. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. The Deputy Minister. Mr. Chaplin, the minister, who is in front of you, Mr. the Honorable Mabunda. But anyway, it's fine.
What's happening, Honorable Mabunda?
Chair, sorry for reshuffling the minister. In fact, it was not a reshuffling per se. Maybe it was a promotion. Because I said Honorable Minister. So I'm sorry if that is a reshuffling.
Continue on, Monta.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to be educated. I want to learn. You see, page 16, slide 16. You end up 2016-2017 financial year. There was two arrows. And it doesn't say 2017 and 2018. Where are we? Because it talks of 2016 and 2017. The other one, Chair, like I said, I want to be educated. This tariff thing, you know, is it increased? And if you have increased these tariffs, there is one area called Nikala in Ekurule. There is an unpalatable situation there. Communities are up in arms with ESCOM with this increment, their tariffs. can I get clarity with regard to this tariff increase? What do you mean by these things? Because even community members, they don't understand some of the things that you are saying. And that's why there is a fight between them and ESCOM. Because some of the things ESCOM says, no, it's not us, it's NERSA. So we are forced to do these things because of NERSA. NERSA is forcing us to do these things so that they cause an unpalatable situation between the two of us, ESCOM and the community. And you are clean. Can I be educated about these things? A community is a location in Ekurhuletswe where you come from. It's in Nikana.
That's honorable estate.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Thank you, honorable minister. You see, the reason why honorable estate, if you go to parliamentary archives, deputy minister, some of the questions that he is asking you and NERSA people here, if you go to that parliamentary archives, you will find those questions. And some of those questions were not answered. That's why she's repeating them, but they come in the other way around. You might not notice that this question was asked in 2014. So because he's not satisfied the manner in which you are answering questions. So that sometimes I say to you, not only you, and all the entities, that I don't want to dig answers from you. In fact, you must tell me honestly so. Where you have a problem, say it, to say yes, indeed here, committee members, we've got a problem, these are challenges, and this is a program that we want to address some of these challenges. So I'll be very happy. You know, I was going through your presentation here. It's very technical. To me, it's very technical. Like my colleague said, do you want us to bring some calculators in the committee to say, well, if you are saying this is 0%, what do you mean from the 30 billion? What do you mean? I can't answer that question, even if they might ask me this question in my constituency. The other one relates to, I suggest, Chair, I don't know as to whether it will happen, but with due respect, Chair, the Deputy Minister here, I was of the view that, you see, there are a lot of some accusations here, and ESCOM will come and accuse NERSA. Don't you think one day we must bring the two into one meeting? Start from 10 o'clock until 4 o'clock, late in the afternoon. So that we'll be able to get the gist of the matter. Because if you invite ESCOM next week, they will come here and accuse NERSA to say these are the people who are making life difficult for us to implement our program. And where do we stand? What do you tell your people? The constituency you represent? No answer. One of the things, Chair, which is very political, the minister is here, maybe. Minister, you see, the reason why we've got this problem with NERSA and ESCOM on a daily basis, of financial years, the previous and the current financial year, is that ESCOM, us as the department, Deputy Minister, will sit and give them money, a lot of money to implement their program. And coming to the accountability, what they are saying is that they don't account to the DOE, Department of Energy, but yet we are giving them money to implement the program. It's a political question, Minister. When are you going to transfer ESCOM from public enterprise to the Department of Energy? Maybe if you are transferring them to us, they will be able to tell us the honest fact, because they will be here from time to time. Even if we call them next week, because we want to meet with the board, the entire board must come and account. But they will send only two or one junior officials to go and present to the parliamentary committee. And when you ask them some difficult questions, they will rather say no. We'll give you an answer in writing because a person who was supposed to answer you is not here. So we are going in a merry-go-round from 2014 until 2018. Merry-go-round. We don't want to see these situations. Our people are hungry. You see, I mentioned this issue last week. You are not in that meeting. It's a very, very serious challenging issue, Deputy Minister. In the village where I come from, in fact, all of us come from villages before we migrate to townships. You'll sit there on a sunny Sunday and watching the sports, the Kaizer Chiefs versus Orlando Pirates. You sit there, watch them. 15 minutes down the line, the electricity is off. Our kids are used to this electricity. And they will start crying to say, Father, can you call ESCOM? What is it? Why must I call ESCOM? Call them because they know that is the only solution. They call ESCOM so that they must fix their mess. And when you go to Santen, that thing will never happen. Never happen. You'll see and watch your television until it is washes you fell asleep. The electricity booms by heavy people. And us in the community, no. It'll take 2 or 3 days. Our fridges will, food in those fridges will get rotten. Because of these challenges between NERSA and ESCOM in terms of tariffs increase. And this thing is killing our people because most of our people who are getting this electricity in my area, my village, are the elderly people, pensioners who are getting grants. And because they know Mr. Matlala is from Parliament, this is the answer. They will call Matlala, even during the night, to say, Mr. Matlala, hey, wake up, tell us, what happened? Why is this electricity off in our area? And they will end up saying, no, we are going to report you to the minister because you are not doing your work. You are sleeping on your job. How do you answer those people? It's an unfortunate situation. When are you transferring ESCOM from public enterprise to the Department of Energy? Thank you very much.
Thank I suppose the Deputy Minister will tell you when the transfer is going to happen. Honorable Matala, you see that slide? That's the slide there and that graph. So it's an illustration of the problem you have. With ESCOM, so Honorable Davis calls it the death spiral when costs get out of control like that, and demand is low in the manner that it does. We want to run into a debt trap. So you remember that the president did say that they'll undertake a review. Just to respond to your first, to our last point about ESCOM and its location, they'll undertake a review. I'm sure when that is done, we can find a solution. Because some of the problems we have are structural problems. So we're trying to find a solution, but we can't find solutions because structures the way they are now don't enable you to find solutions. When we had load shedding, we had to establish a war room. That gave an indication that it is because the structures, the current structures, don't work. If we didn't have the war room, that brings them together to ensure a comprehensive intervention, would not have solved the problem. So going forward, you would need a macro organization of the state that ensures that these structural and systemic problems are resolved. So, but it's a long process. So, as President said, I'm sure they'll get back to this. But the Minister can give her a take about when she anticipates the transfer will happen. The other issue, before I give Nurse and the Deputy Minister to answer your questions, and the reason I'm doing this, Honourable Members, it's helpful to answer, to ask questions, and that we get clarity. But the dilemma we have is that we'll meet again here and repeat the same questions. As Honourable Matala was saying, that it's not the first time these questions are being raised, but we can tackle them because of how we organize, and including how oversight happens. Now, I suppose that when the President says that it's a new dawn, there's got to be a new dawn in relation to how Parliament conducts oversight, the effectiveness of the oversight. So it's not helpful that we keep asking these questions and nothing happens. And we can take the whole term on the same questions, nothing happens. I'm sure I've raised this frustration in the past, but we have to find a solution to this. I want to buttress one question that was asked here, because I didn't understand. In ESCOM's reason, so there's a combination of things there. So they're supposed to lie the challenge. You say that ESCOM in the one year application. So you say, and I know one colleague asked this question. You say that, if you can explain that again. So you say that no, we don't want a 5-year application. We only want a 1-year application, and the reasons for doing that is because the IRP has not been finalized. That's one reason. The other is the impact of the renewable energy project. I didn't understand that, but I hear that was cited. And then one of the things is, the RCA is a separate thing, independent thing, I'm sure. Then there's a question with regard to it that can be answered separate. And then now recently there's the issue of the court case that one member asked. Because I want to find out, so because my general approach to these things, Honourable Members, is, and our members, other colleagues are dealing with the historical things that have happened to ESCOM to ensure that there can be consequences for what has happened. But the thing that worries me is, are we going to find a solution for this entity going forward? And how is that going to be? How is this going to be done? So when everything else is said and done, we're going to have to return to that issue. So how do we move this entity forward with the necessary reorganization to ensure that the problems we had in the past do not recur? So I don't understand that why they were saying we only want to apply for 1 year because of the RP, because of the Independent Power Producer Program, and there would have been another reason that I noted here, I can't see now. But I just want to understand the logic for the 1 year application. If you can, at least from where they sit, why were they saying this? The other questions I think we can discuss in another forum when ESCOM is around. You see the issues of the usage of the OCTG and the issue of the plants, the plants that are going to be decommissioned. So we've been talking about this, about are we sequencing our actions such that we will still meet demand by the time that these stations are decommissioned. So I don't know. Can't put this question to that. But it's an issue that we're going to have to return to another forum where ESCOM is present. Okay. There have been lots of questions. I hope I didn't cloud your very specific questions to honorable members. So let's Deputy Minister, we want to come last. CEO, what are you doing? I'm trying to chair the meeting. Okay. Okay, that's that. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for the questions. Maybe before I go, into the specific questions, just want to paint a picture here that NERSA regulates within the parameters that are set by the directive, being in way of the policies that are in place, and it is within the framework that we come in place. And in this regard, I must also thank the explanatory note put forward by the Honorable Chair in terms of also the structural and systemic issues, because there is a particular space that we come in as an energy regulator, and the other spaces are dealt with from the police as well as the implementers, if I can put it like this, being ESCO in this case. And then there are also other departments, because we've got the Department of Energy being the policy making department, whilst we've got the EPE, public enterprises, as the shareholding department, and also the impact of the ESCOM's tariffs cuts across the whole and it affects the whole economy. And as such, that is why also it affects even the poorest of the poor. And as a result, we've got the situation where tariff assessment, we've had in the public hearing about 23,000 submissions dealing with this pricing issue.
Can you raise your voice a little bit?
Okay, thank you. So I'm saying that we've got about 23,000 submissions in terms of comments that we received. 23,000?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why Honorable Fogg wanted to be sure that you mean 23,000.
Yes. And we're saying that is also open to the, it's not just particular stakeholders that you are looking at, it's open to the public. Each and every person can be able to come and to attend and also contribute. And it's been widely published in terms of in the media. We've got our Facebook page, our Twitter page, as well as in the radio and newspaper. So we always say that there is always room to improve in as far as these things are concerned. And we've also covered the 9 provinces in this regard, in terms of those issues. There is a challenge in terms of what they normally term is regulatory asymmetry, where you find that the regulating entity doesn't have as much information as the regulated entity, in this case being ESCOM. So then what you then do is more of probing what is being provided to you, so that you can get to the crux of whether something has been incurred prudently or not. And I think the issue of prudence is also coming up very strongly, not just for the electricity sector, but for all the sectors that we regulating. And we had a discussion paper on prudency, which we published, and then on the 1st of March, we had a public hearing on that, where ESCOM was also there to present in terms of their case, because it's important to deal with issues of prudence. And obviously, we don't have an item that will say corruption, but it's obvious that whenever corruption is involved, you would actually not have prudence there. But how you deal with that prudence is in terms of risk management and having the right checks and balances to deal with it. And I just want then to quickly zoom back to the questions. Like those questions, my colleagues are also here. I will let them fill in with regard to those. With regard to the reasons for 1 year for ESCOM's, from ESCOM's viewpoint, on our reason for decision, on page 13, we do outline the in terms of the background and introduction, in terms of the issue that the reasons that were put forth by ESCOM as the in their request for a 1 year tariff. And it was on the balance of scales that it was decided that we can accede to that request, noting that, for example, if the RFP is still pending, if it comes up and maybe requires a change, maybe a drastic change in what should be in the energy mix, if the IPPs they are signed, even if they are not going to be in 18-19, there's some agreement that is reached within the 5-year pay period, they will have to feature. So instead of doing having a determination that you then have several revisions because of this change, it was deemed better that, as they have requested, let's deal with this 1 year from their side. Also, what was advanced also here was the issue of the procurement in terms of the nuclear build program. So, as I said, there are certain reasons put forth, got about six of them, and then it was deemed that maybe prudent that we deal with this matter. Also noting that it will give us enough time to deal with this 1 year, and then we then even got further to look at how then we need to deal with the multi-year period going forward. When it comes to the electricity blackouts, our colleagues also weigh in here in terms of the blackouts. I think the other thing is that anyway the transfer that of ESCOM is outside of our mandate. When it comes to the tariff increases, for this tariff increase, this is ESCOM's tariff increase, and then it then translates to the electricity retail tariff structural adjustment that we then do in terms of our methodology, which then informs the tariff at the distribution level. And that tariff is then what ESCOM sells to the municipalities. And then in terms of municipalities, because they are different and varied, in terms of that, we just give a guideline and not necessarily a price as such that the municipalities will then have to sell electricity at. And that is now an issue that is dealt with at the municipal level. When it comes to Honorable Matlala, when it comes to slide 16, I think that in terms of 2018-19, if we were to include 2018-19, the graph will go slightly up for the price, because it's going to be 93.7. That is what this is the figure that we have on slide 8. And then we've got 88 gigawatt-hours. That is the sales. That is what is contained on slide 8. We did not include it because we just said, let's talk about the historical one and things that have certainly happened, because this is more forward-looking. But that's how the graph is going to look like. It's going to look down and then go up. And then with regard to Honorable Mabunda, I think I've addressed the issue of the public hearings and the time frame. I think it's very difficult to say that. I'm just going to respond at a high level to this one, zoom into that one. But it's very difficult to say you are going to have enough time when it comes to assessment, because it can depend on how far you want to assess. But there's also what is called a law of diminishing return, that even if you are given much time, you will then, what you then analyze actually does not yield much of a difference. But we believe that the time that was provided and the application by our officials and the energy regulator has been is adequate for the reasons provided and for the decision that was taken. In terms of the ESCOM considering the decision and taking us on review, so far for us it's been more hearsay. They've said what we know. They've said they are considering that, they are studying it, they are going to revert to us. They did revert to us in terms of asking certain questions, including issues of the RCA, as well as also some of the matters, which we believe, most of them, we believe they are already contained in the reasons for decision. Which they go further and they will find that. And we are going to duly respond to them. The CEO will also touch on that because communication coming to the regulator comes via the office of the CEO. When it comes to the figures on page 11, Honorable Gada, is that on page 11, the figures and percentages, the preceding slide sought actually to just explain that on slide 10. Slide 10 does have the breakdown of the price, where it's in cents per kilowatt hour presented just to indicate that. And then the percentage, it just shows the percentage contribution of it. And it is, as you will see, it's not very much different because it's 93 and then each percentage is in 100. So that slide is actually superfluous. And going back to the issues of slides, again, as you have explained that from Honorable Matlala, the fact that this tends to be more of a technical presentation, and it's important that we also balance that in terms of explaining it in a manner that will be easy to understand and interrogate further. We've seen that slide, there was no particular reason that maybe you are hiding the slide away from the committee. Honorable Davis, slide, it was slide 11 and 12 in the previous one. That sought to demonstrate the replacement of coal with substituting all IPPs with coal to say that it's other besides the other environmental challenges, etc., that in the short term is still a viable option in terms of doing it because you've got the coal and you've got these plants that are operating and the IPPs are actually not in place. So it's just to demonstrate that going the route of coal-fired generation for this application is sufficient. The same with the, I think it talks to the issue of the renewable IPP. You know, so it just says that it will result in lower cost benefit of about 21 billion compared to the cost benefit of all IPPs. This was just for illustration purposes, but we're thinking that when we were presenting, we tried to illustrate that we've used more coal and then not the IPPs, which even if they were signed today, they would not be in operation in the period under consideration. And then the water usage, we do acknowledge that for steam generation, you'll have to use processed water, and therefore there'll be demand for water, which is we understand as a water scarce country is a challenge. And I think that it is within the industry reasonable limits, the water utilization that they're making. And that is why we've also got the issues of environmental leave, where also the environmental affairs weighs in terms of ensuring that, in terms of how they deal with the negative impacts on the environment are being taken care of. So, because as I said, there are different issues that are coming in. In terms of the efficiency, Honorable Blood, is that it's been, as I said, the one issue is a matter of regulatory asymmetry that I've mentioned in the beginning. That you tend to interrogate what is provided to you, and it's another thing when you are on the other side. That is why when we engage also with the Department of Public Enterprise, which is the shareholding department. We engage with National Treasury. We engage with the Department of Energy to deal with these matters. But by and large, there are certain things that, in terms of how the sourcing of the coal that they need to deal with, and I think that the whole issue of the cost overrun that they've experienced in terms of their infrastructure program, I mean, shows that there is enough room for them to improve. And where again, where there are issues that are raised of as I said earlier on, were issues of corruption, that we are not dealing with the cause of corruption. But it goes back to the issue of prudence. Because when there is no prudence, the cost will be the first thing that will go up. It will tend to go up. So those are the issues that would have to be looked at. But I'm happy that it's also been put forth that there's going to be an engagement with ESCOM also here alongside to deal with these matters holistically. Because we're not here in a situation where we're busy pointing fingers at each other. We're just simply doing our work as a regulator, but also not regulating for the demise of ESCOM. We're regulating for the good of the industry as well as the public. Hence, there must be a balancing of the industry itself and the industry player being ESCOM in this case and the public good. And that is why the figures, some would say, as been said by some of the honourable members, that we should not be giving them anything. Some would say, no, give them anything because they need to be able to for their sustainability. So we've got to balance that. Hence, we've got what is in the analysis, in the our reason for decision. There is a section that deals goes deeper in terms of dealing with the economic impact. And we all know that energy is an input cost. And if you lower the input cost, then you allow players also to come in and invest into this economy. So that is where also we're saying that if we lower the increase, instead of not having an increase at all, we feel that there is some balance being struck, because then you are going to be able to have investment flowing in and people having the industry. And then it also helps ESCOM in terms of also lifting their sales. And long term, they should return to a situation where there is this balance of the economic benefit versus the sustainability of ESCOM. In terms of the price in our colleagues will speak to that, and I think that on the IRP, from our side, we will just await the publication thereof and move from there. I think the department will be of assistance there. I think the issue of whether ESCOM will go for review and interdict us, I think we'll deal with that when it happens, because at the moment we are not informed formally from their side that they've got these challenges. In our engagement, they've just questioned us, and we also asked us to deal with the issues of the RCA's expediency, which we are dealing with. With regard to I think from honourable essays and the issues concerning slide 13, again it's a balance here, because even if you cannot have a situation where a staff complement is just changed overnight, looking at all the legal, social, economic impacts that deal with it. So even if there are some levels of they need, maybe they can be further probing and further gradual changes that are implemented. I think some of this has been just example. In terms of slide 15, that you talk of renewable energy, and you highlighted that it has demonstrated as a shining example. I think that from the department side and from our side, we've done what is expected of us, because the ERA does empower the minister in terms of Section 34, and negotiations were entered into, and then when we're supposed to sign, and I think it is within people's democratic right to then query what is presented to them. And I think that that one, really, I will leave it at that, because I believe that the bulk of those issues are matters that will be dealt with outside of the purview of the regulator. I think with that, I would just also like to hand over to the CEO to come in, as well as Mr. Brian and Madam.
Why do you choose Mr. Brian?
Why do you choose Mr. Brian?
No, I said Mr. Brian and Madam Masiba.
And they're from what you call the price?
Electricity tariffs and pricing.
Electricity tariffs and pricing. Both of them. Yeah. I want the Madam, not Mr. Brian.
Apologies, Chair.
Why do you want all the men to speak?
Thank you, Chair. I'll just try to supplement some of Ms. Mkize's responses. I think one of the big questions that was asked here today is about, I remember someone was just saying there's a lot of lamentations from the regulator in terms of what is it that Eskom's doing wrong, etc. Now, there was another, the RFD document that we sent you. I think we must highlight that that particular document, in terms of its detail and what we've presented there, is unprecedented for the regulator. We don't normally provide such detail to the licensees in terms of the decisions we make. But in terms of this particular decision, and given the need for Eskom to break this vision...
Can you just repeat that?
Sorry.
The unprecedented nature of what you did. Just repeat.
So in terms of the way we formulated the reasons for decision, I think even for the multi-year decision that was made before our time, the actual document was like 40 pages in total for 5 years. For this 1 year, we felt that for every element that we assessed, we needed to go into detail. And the reason for that is if you go through the document, you will see we've given Eskom the roadmap that says to break this vicious cycle at a very high level, you need to collect the revenues that we allocate to you. You haven't been doing that. Number two, your CapEx program. You've been spending more than we've allowed you every year. So that money had to come from somewhere, and we hadn't allowed you the money to pay back those loans. Number three is all the expenses. So an example is we've said you've got a high fixed cost base, sales are going down, which means that even if expenses remain flat, you would have price increases. You need to reduce the fixed cost base. So as Mr. Mkize said, what we said to them was your regulatory asset base is all your assets, but they've got to be productively employed in producing and supplying electricity. So if you are using half of every power station, that's not efficient. So we set an efficiency level, and we said we take out two of your power stations from your regulated asset base. It's not an operational decision. It says we're not going to let you get a return on these assets. And that was Hendrina and Arnott. It then also affects your production plan, which says you won't be using the expensive coal-fired power stations. Use the cheaper ones. So then we adjust the primary energy number, and we say to them, well, you can't get the expensive coal. You need to use cheaper coal. And we've also then benchmarked the coal price against our decision that we made in MYPD, and we said, so what should the inflated value have been, and where are you sitting, and we then reduce the variance, and that talks to corruption. We're not a criminal kind of organization, we're an economic regulator, so what we do is we set the efficiency benchmark, and we don't allow them above that, so that's for their own bottom line. And that really should then cater for an element of that corruption. Honorable Esther Rosen, in terms of the manpower cost, which speaks to expenses, yes, the World Bank study says something about Eskom is three times, it has three times more staff than it needs. We assessed that it's in the RFD. We said we couldn't take that as is. But what we've done is we've taken back to the 2007 efficiency levels, which you referred to. So we said you used to produce 7.5 odd gigawatt hours per employee. You're now producing 5. We're going to require you to go back to 7, and we reduce the staff numbers by 6,000 odd for the calculation for what we allow. So, you know, we've given them all these roadmaps. So if you go through the whole RFD, you'll see. Reduce your fixed costs, reduce expenses operationally, collect the revenues that we haven't allowed them, as Mr. Mkize said, this thing about efficiency and reducing consumption and all that kind of stuff. So if we've given them a roadmap. So it's there. They need to do what we have asked them to do, and that speaks once again to alignment with the Department of Public Enterprises, and we are engaging with them, because if their corporate plan that's approved doesn't speak to our decision, And that's what we've seen. So we allowed them over the 5 years X rands for CapEx. The corporate plan allowed them to spend 72 billion rand more. But then that says you're not getting it from the customer. Who does the bridge financing? Where does that money come from? It comes from loans or from the shareholder. And you can see they're saying they've got this, what's it, 50-odd billion rand hold? Okay, so that's the other thing. I think there was, so in terms of breaking this vicious cycle and death spiral, we've given them the pointers. They need to follow it. And yes, they'll come back and they'll complain, etc. But the regulator has to set the efficiency benchmark. And that's why we've got an RCA. It's not for where Eskom is doing funny things, or they need to come back and say, well, this is all the things we've done, and we couldn't hit that efficiency benchmark, and convince us that that's why they couldn't. Okay, so this thing of them not collecting 10% of their revenue every year, if your forecast for CPI was 2% out, why is your sales 10% down? You know, those are some of the things that we're having to grapple with. I think, just in terms of the two slides that were removed, they didn't add any value, and actually I requested for them to be removed, because the slide before shows you, and I think that's partially why we gave a breakdown of the price. 13 cents of every unit sold goes to IPP. Okay, and for our own information, we're looking to say, well, what if there were no IPPs and you only use coal and your cheapest coal? Then the price wouldn't be 93 cents on average, it would be 83. But remember that other projects have got additional economic benefits. So that those slides didn't give the full picture, but at the high level, it's a 10%, 10 cents swing. That's really what was in there. I think, Honorable Mavunda, just on the consultation, you have to remember that we received this application in August last year. So we started analyzing it from August. We then have a consultation period of 30 days for stakeholders to provide comments. And then the period that you talk about was the public hearing period. So we kind of do, what do they call it, delta braces. We analyze, we get written comments from everybody in the country, essentially, and then we do a roadshow in all 9 provinces. And we had over 90 presentations at those roadshows, in addition to the 23,000-plus comments that we received. So we do. We've also taken cognizance. We've got a number of comments at those hearings that, you know, we go to the main centers of each province, and we need to look at how do we get into the townships, etc. And we are looking at how we do that as we go forward. I think there was a question about what are the implications of giving Eskom less money than what they asked for. I think the implication is that Eskom has to go and have a very hard look at its own cost base and its operations, and take direction or guidance from what the regulator is saying. We see as the most efficient or an efficient level of operation. Because you'll see in our documents too, we've also assessed that over the last 5 years, Eskom, by at least 16%, there was a slide that Mr. Mkhize presented, on average, has not kept to the expenses level that we've set. So in addition to spending more capex, they've spent 16% odd more than what we've allowed them on expenses, and they've not collected the revenue. So there's a slide that I think it was Honorable Matlala asked about why we only ended last year and not this year. It's because those are annual numbers, and end of March is the last day of this financial year. But they're already showing, if you look at the forecast in this one-year application, that number is below 190, just below. So the sales are going down. That's where they start. That's their forecast to where they're going to get. So they're already going down some more. And as they said, if from their previous sales forecast, if we gave them 0% increase on their costs, it would have been a 9% increase anyway, just to cater for the reduction in sales. I think from my side, that's really it. I think there was a question on RCAs, which is not for today. The reason why we couldn't process the 3 is because there was a court case against us that prevented us from processing them, and that was settled in October last year, and that allowed us to then proceed. And then I think there was one question the chair asked about the delay in being able to come because of the confidentiality requirements. So what we normally do is once we do a decision,
If it's urgent for it to be published, which it was, we publish the decision. We can then take a week or two or three just to polish up the reasons for decision. And as I said, in this one, we wanted to make sure that we were very clear on everything. And then once that's finalized, we normally send it to our licensees and give them 14 days to come back on anything they deemed to be confidential, which they did, and then we had to take a decision on what we felt would be commercially sensitive. And we didn't allow all of the stuff they asked for. That's also a publicly available or reasons for decision. And then we could release the document and come back and present it. And then I think there was one question on elasticity. I think we want Lerma to answer it, but I could actually assist her, but I'm going to ask the chair if we can let the lady answer the question too.
I'll let Brian
answer this.
Go ahead.
The church is asking me to ask her if you feel permission.
Okay. As long as the madam is dedicating it to.
Yeah, that is no chair. Chair, on the issue of the elasticity, what the difference between our calculation of elasticity and that of ESCO is that our elasticity is based on current circumstances, because we've looked at the coming in of IPPs, people moving from the grid into rooftops and all of that. But ESCOM's elasticity calculation was based on a study that was performed about 4 years ago. So therefore, they did not consider the changing and the ability of people from moving from electricity into other sources of energy. So that is really the difference. It's based on an old study, and ours is more recent. But also, I want to add, Honorable Chairperson, with your permission again, on the issue of, I think it was a question asked by Honorable Fagu about the implication for ESCOM and the financial impact. So what we do normally is, as the CEO has said, is that with our decision, we are saying to ESCOM, we are giving them a direction to say, go and cut your costs, go and be more efficient. But once we've also done that, the next thing that we do, we've got a section within even the RFD where we do a financial impact analysis. And what we use, and I'm going to try not to be too technical about this, and what we try to do there, we use the indices that are used by rating agencies. And what we have seen is that in our analysis, there are three ratios that we looked at, which are generally used by these rating agencies. And our analysis has shown that all of these three seem to be on the healthy side. And I'll give an example, again, without being too technical. But we've calculated ESCOM's free cash flows. But this free cash flow, when you calculate it, we calculate it based on ESCOM taking certain actions. And those actions are those that are outlined by the CEO, be more efficient and be more prudent. And it came out, the free cash flow came at about 32 billion, which in our view is a very healthy free cash flow situation. We also looked at their debt service ratios and their interest cover ratios. Both of these are above 1x. And when it's above 1x, it means that as and when the interest becomes due, ESCOM will be able to pay for those interests and their loans and remain sustainable. So I just wanted to put that into perspective to say that though the decision...
What's the debt service ratio?
The debt service ratio is sitting at 1.05 times, and then the interest cover is 1.37 times. And that is sufficient for them if they can, and that is very critical that we emphasize that ESCOM needs to do certain actions. If they don't do anything, then they will not see these ratios coming into line. But they need to be the one as management to say that there has been some possible wastage in terms of how we manage our costs. If we can cut them, then we'll reach this a sustainable level, and we'll have a happy and financial sustainable balance sheet. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm going to take follow-up questions and then allow answers, and then we can give to the Deputy Minister. Is there something that
Sorry, Chair, there was just your question about the 1 year versus 5 year. and there was also an issue about if IRP is not available, etc. I just want to indicate that the energy regulator, when it took the decision to allow the 1 year, also indicated that it would not permit another 1 year, regardless of those reasons, and Eskom would have to make a plan as to how it forecasts.
I will not be able to get it. That's fine, but you made the decision. I don't understand why you did that. So can we make a follow-up question? And Deputy Minister, maybe at the end, you say there's an issue because my approach is we're trying to find solutions to the challenges we have. There's a context to this, to the problem we have. There's a larger context, including the other committees that are dealing with this. So there's a context. So when they say, what we're doing now is unprecedented, it tells you what. There's a context to the problems we're having in Eskom now. Why are we having them now? So I was going to ask, who has been there 10 years ago? Have we had a situation like this that we have got to struggle like this with Eskom tariffs? But then, let's have follow-up questions, because you see, if we don't resolve the other problems that are arising in the other committees, we'll not resolve the issue of the tariffs and the efficiency prudence and all of that. So these are, you must deal with the totality of the problems in Eskom. So let's have follow-up questions. Okay, you want me? I know you can fight with me always. So let's start that side. Oh, Honorable Esteze. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know, the cost calculations that you people have made was based on today's situation. I'm not talking about, for example, Kuberg Power Station, what was built when Yannis Mas was still a corporal, that now operates at 45 cents a kilowatt hour. We're not talking about that. We're talking about cost now today, and that's what you based your cost on. And that's why I had a problem that the current Mr. Mabuza, the current chairperson, completely different from your cost. And also my problem is, how do you, as NERSA, how do you oversee and execute your mandate, the decision to regulate that lack broad public support will never be sustainable. Now, what most of and the IDC said that found that 20% and more, 30-40% of municipalities use their multi-year price determination tariff increases as a supplementary revenue increase. How do you oversee it? How do you, because who does it come back to at the end? But I just said, you know, this, what Eskom wanted was 19.5%, and thank God we didn't allow. That would have pushed the municipality cost up more than nearly 30%. I also mentioned Saldana and BHP Billiton that you people have never touched on. You know, what are they paying? Who's paying? Who's, and I am exactly who I said. Municipalities also that charge, municipalities are the bulk buyers of power from Eskom. So how come Eskom give their direct suppliers a better price than what they give municipalities? How come some of that cost not be generated back to the people, the taxpayers? Why? How come municipalities must pay? I know they oversee and maintain it, but they increase that cost tremendously, and you give your direct customers much better increases. You haven't touched Saldana, you haven't touched BHP Billiton. What else did I want to say? Oh yes, Mr. Davis mentioned something about a slide that was not there. And Chair, I know it was not on the presentation, so I'm just going to take, but that was absolutely nonsense. It was absolutely nonsense. They mentioned coal, the cost of coal per kilowatt hour of something like 27% or 27 cents. Ridiculous. That's not what coal is. We're paying and renewable energy at 2 rand 27 or something cents on that land. Where does it come from? You know, when I was at varsity, it was more rugby and women than anything else. But still, I was there for a couple of years. I can still read them in the same English. So really, this is nonsense. It's unacceptable. We would have pulled you apart if that was on your presentation. Sorry, Gabon.
Okay. Honorable David, are you next? Deputy Minister wants to respond to the question of the John Smart being a corporal.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Honorable Aitzen is quite correct. He did raise an issue and I think it wasn't addressed, so this is not even a follow-up. The issue around BHP billets, and I'm not aware about Saldana, but probably there is that. Maybe just a little bit of background. What had happened is in the late 80s, you had a number of power stations that were mothballed because there was excess capacity. Then among those ones that were not as mothballed, you then had the issue that electricity was actually being sold below cost. So that's when the contracts with BHP, Bellerton and others then started at that point to say, look, we are already losing, so let's at least get some customers. And I think there was some negotiation. So that was done, and I think you remember. Those contracts, if I'm not mistaken, have run out. Can the regulator confirm that? As far as I know, they've run out. Some of them have run out. But it was very difficult for the new government, the democratic government, to actually stop those, because those are contracts made by the state and we inherit everything, the debt, the bad contracts and everything that goes with that. So I think most of those have actually run out. Now, what is happening now is that Eskom is again saying we have an oversupply. The question that's being asked of them is to say, since you had been paying companies to say, please don't use our power because we don't have any at the time when there was a shortage. Now companies, people are saying to Eskom, why don't you then now, without entering into 20-year contracts, come to some agreement with some of these companies which are now looking at other energy sources rather than the grid to get into contract with them at an affordable level. Now that one is not necessarily, it's not in the purview necessarily of NERSA, but there have been discussions to say rather than sit there with this energy that you cannot sell to an Angola, for instance, that would love to get that power because we don't have interconnectors, are you able to then get to some agreement with some of the entities? Of course, it would not be below cost and issues like that. So that was being discussed maybe for a two-year period or issues like that. And that's my understanding around that particular issue. In terms of the older contracts, as I said, that was a historic thing. Now, from an energy department perspective, for us, that those issues have created serious problems, because they've had a direct impact on the price part. So you start off with a point where we have seemingly this excess electricity, and we start the program of electrification and access to energy for everybody in South Africa. And that thing moves so fast that by the time 2007 comes, the last time Eskom had presented to cabinet, they had said would run out of electricity by 2012. It happened before, 4 years earlier than what Eskom had estimated. That, but because we started off such a low base, then the increments were really quite steep because we were starting at a below cost kind of pricing. So at an energy department level, we are very cautious and observing very keenly this issue of whatever negotiations will be there, because they have such an adverse impact in terms of the pricing part. So I just thought I must give a bit of that background and to say these are some of the challenges. But obviously, I think more directly linked to your question and the chairperson's question is the issue of you have one entity with different responsibilities in relation to that entity sitting in different places. It makes it quite difficult to manage. But again, as I said, that's not an NERSA issue, and I think as the chairperson has said, and I will also make my little comment around that issue of Eskom, because right now, if you take over that baby, you must also take over the 300 billion debt. It's quite scary. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Davis, we are on follow-up questions.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks again to NERSA. It's very, very illuminating, so I really appreciate all the information you're giving us. Thank you for answering my question on elasticity. I know it's a kind of a high-level economic concept, but actually it goes to the heart of the issue, because it seems to me that Eskom are saying that they can increase the price of electricity as much as they like, and consumers will continue to pay that price because they have no other choice. And your research has shown that that's not in fact the case. And I think it's rather arrogant, if you don't mind me saying so, on the part of Eskom, to think that they can just keep increasing the prices and there'll be no consequence for them. And in fact, what you're doing is you're trying to save Eskom by saying if you do increase the prices, you're going to go further into this debt spiral, and you're going to lose your customer base, and that'll be the end of Eskom's sustainability if it isn't over already. So I want to commend you very much for that. But my question is, the CEO mentioned that Eskom's data was 4 years old that they presented on the elasticity issue. I want to try and understand why they would do such a thing. Why would they present four-year-old data to bolster their argument? Is it incompetence at Eskom, or is it a willful misrepresentation of the facts? It seems to me that it would be the latter, because surely they have access to top people who can do these calculations with all of the data at their disposal. So can you just shed some light on why you think Eskom would use four-year-old data when you yourself have access to the very latest data? My second question is on the slides that were left out. I don't want to belabor this point. I understand where you're coming from and why they were taken out. But I do want to support my colleague, the Honorable Esterhazer, when he talks about the price of old coal versus new coal and the fact that renewables have come down in price. It just seems that your figures seem a little bit out of touch with reality, because you've created this huge disparity between coal and renewables, which I don't think is currently the case. But I'd like some further comment on that if possible. I'd also like to know if you have ever factored in nuclear, and have you calculated how much the building of new nuclear plants would increase the cost of electricity? Because I think that's something that we need to factor in, given that the nuclear program is not yet off the table as we speak. Then you talked about the roadmap that you've given Eskom, and I thought that was a very, very useful contribution. And I also commend you for producing such a detailed RFC document. And you rightly say that your job is to set the efficiency benchmarks. But my question to you is, what if Eskom doesn't adhere to the roadmap? What if they say, well, what if they say, well, we're not going to because there's no political will, or if they say that we can't for whatever reasons, that will just result in another bailout at the end of the day, and the public will suffer again because it's using public money to bail out an inefficient public utility. So I guess my question to you is, what happens if Eskom don't listen to you? What if they don't adhere to the roadmap? Is there anything that you can do to hold their feet to the fire and hold them to account? Is there any penalties that you can be incurred and that kind of thing? My other question related to that is whether the efficiency benchmark that you talk about, whether that could be reached by introducing competition in the energy sector, especially competition around the generation and the transmission of electricity. Wouldn't that be a way to reach the efficiency benchmark in a way that Eskom seems incapable of reaching at the moment? And have you done any studies to see whether that efficiency benchmark could be reached by unbundling Eskom and breaking Eskom's monopoly? And then, Chair, my last question is to the Deputy Minister. She always seems so relaxed, and I think that's a commendable quality. It's always good to be relaxed, to be calm when everybody else is not calm. But, Minister, you must be concerned at Eskom's death spiral and its impact on the energy sector and the economy in general. So what is the Department of Energy, what are you doing, in other words, to prevent the death spiral, besides gambling with people's pension money every time Eskom comes with a begging bowl? What plans do you have in place to stop this death spiral? Thank you.
You want Nelson to answer that question about private sector participation? Yeah, but you see, we qualified by saying, have we done any study? So I thought now you're asking the regulator a difficult question. They'll speak for themselves. I'm also interested, have they done any study to assess what the pattern that would be? Was there anybody, can we, okay. No, I'm not taking any afterthought questions now. What's your hand up?
Yeah,
okay, all right. Honourable Magunda, so ask your follow-up question.
Thanks, Chair. In fact, through your Chair, I'm not satisfied about the response to my question with regard to public participation. Because even if you can come up with a number to say 23,000 responses, for me 23 is just a number. But what I want to get it clear is the methodology on how you have conducted your public participation, because we have got constituencies, Chairperson. We have got municipalities with the names, those municipalities. I want to hear, for example, to say on this date we have been to this municipality, these are the number of stakeholders present there. Because, for instance, Chair, for argument's sake, we have got a free toll roads agent. Now, people will say, no, but we have consulted them through media, the radio, and stuff like that. But the very same people go to the radio and protest to say we're never consulted. So I think we need to improve our consultation from there. If really we have to take people on board, especially people from the rural areas, I think the Deputy Minister will agree with me on the day that she went to to where, to the area where I come from, when she officially opened a mini power station there. You know, if people were not mobilized to say, let us go and observe what is happening there and ask questions, they will always torture the infrastructure whenever they get frustrated, because they are not taking ownership to that particular thing. So I'm not sure if really this consultation was widely spread to that deep end where people are found. Because remember, Eskom, the large number of customers are the poor people in general. So I'm not sure. Maybe you have consulted the elite. Like Mr. Matlala, Honorable Matlala said, the Santen people and stuff like that. Of course, they will say that, that which you say. But I, in essence, I want to hear. Maybe you have visited a constituency, a constituency office or a constituency area where a certain member of parliament or MP or administrator in that constituency is aware, because you have to know these things so that we reduce these questions. I'm particularly not satisfied. Thanks.
Yeah, no, the regulators know that it is an old issue about how they do the public participation and how they conduct their public hearings. So can we have responses now, and then we'll give the Deputy Minister a chance to speak before we close.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thanks to Honourable Members for the questions. Again, I'll just touch on those questions, and colleagues, with the permission of the Chairperson, will also weigh in. First, I just want to say that in terms of ESCOM, there is a portion that the regulator needs to take responsibility for in terms of regulation. There are also the financial responsibility of the board of ESCOM. And again, it then augurs well when we say that there should be a holistic engagement that will also put ESCOM into the right frame in terms of handling the issues that we're dealing with. And when it comes also to the to this matter of elasticity, you see, the challenge again is that elasticity we can talk of it and look good in terms of saying that there is elasticity, but those people that can afford, for example, to switch to like a photovoltaic solar, use those photovoltaic panels because they can afford it. Like I'm told that the macro is good to that. But the challenge is that the poor are not having that luxury. Actually, they tend to use the dirtier forms of energy, and therefore that remains a concern. Which means that once there is that challenge, the lowering of the price and the increase in sales, bringing those in, bringing new industry players in, is actually what is desirable. When it comes to the issues of consultation, Honorable Mabun, we note that, and I think that we cannot discuss it exhaustively, but I think it will help for us to take these lessons and put them in place. And we also, other than just this consultation, the public hearings, there are consumer consultation, the customer focus programs that we are having. And I think it's going to be important to inculcate that in that process, so that when we get to specific public hearings, there are people that are also have been mobilized in the communities and have participated in these stakeholder engagements to participate therein. If, again, to say, Mr. Davis, what if, I mean, Honorable Davis, what if ESCOM doesn't adhere to the roadmap? You're saying that that roadmap, when it is given over to ESCOM, it actually is given over to the board, and the board needs to exercise its fiduciary duty to be able to do that. Maybe with some my colleagues would bring into light in terms of why ESCOM would provide that. But as you said, is that they had done a particular study in a particular year, and then they provided the study that they had done. Whereas we are looking at what is happening now as we see changes that are taking place in terms of people looking at substitution. Because in over a short term, we don't substitute, but over a long term, you are able to also find sources that you can, alternative sources to use if the main source is challenging. So do you check?
I heard what you say. I heard the opinion on the public sector participation. I didn't hear whether there's any specific study that you conducted in the past with regard to that. Yeah, because I suspect. You see that your last. The last page, yeah, the last slide there. When we come back to consider how do we move forward, that's going to be a big issue. So the reason we need some empirical evidence, because that, the issue raising on the last slide, cannot end up in ideological bloodletting that takes you nowhere. So can we get some evidence that shows that this inviting private sector participants would help in resolving the problem we have. Who's next, Mr. Bryan? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, just to add on the issue of elasticity. What happened is that this issue was raised in one of the public hearings. As you have heard, we do public hearings in all nine provinces. So what would happen is that ESCOM, maybe when we are in Cape Town, they would present, and then after that we raise questions, and then they would then say that, can we be given a chance to come back maybe when we get to Joburg to then respond to that. That question actually on the elasticity was raised in the previous public hearings, and then when they came in the next public hearings, which in our view was that they did not have sufficient time, and that's why they just took the old version of the study that was done before, and they presented that. As it is right now, that study has not been updated by ESCO. So it is still based on something that was done some few years ago. And our view is that maybe when we do the MYPD4, then that study needs to be done to complete that circle. That it was more of an off-the-shelf response, because there was already a study that was done previously.
Okay, so you want to follow up?
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to say, to a great extent, slide 16 also does illustrate the issue of elasticity. If one looks at how the sales behave as one increases the tariff, but taking also due cognizance of the economic climate in terms of the demand in general that should happen, but the general trend does agree with the elasticity principle. And then when it comes to the issue of the structure of ESCOM that you've spoken about, bringing in private sector to play, we think that generally one would say that there will be efficiencies that are also brought in when the private sector participates, and then this public-private partnership. But we need to then move in from our side and not talk in general terms, but talk on specific. So we take it as part of our homework. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. There was one question just I think Honourable Davis asked about have we factored in nuclear and have we worked out what an increase would be? So I mean, that's, I guess the part on the increase, what would that be, is how long is a piece of string? But in terms of the current application, there were some nuclear costs that were disallowed, but for Kuburg in terms of storage. So we work with what they've given us. We wouldn't be able to predict beyond the 1 year. But if they do have those in their plans and they come with a 5 year, they will probably factor something in that we'd have to consider.
Honorable David is using a backdoor to find an answer to another question that preoccupied. We should be satisfied that this is resolved by now, Honorable David. Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was just going through the notes, and I think most of the issues have actually been addressed. But maybe just to speak about what was referred to in terms of NERSA being set up to regulate a monopoly. And I think one of the things I have said in this committee, even in the past, is that a monopoly is a monopoly. It doesn't matter whether it's private or it's a government entity. A monopoly will always be not as efficient as it should be. So there are those issues that we need to understand. But what we also need to understand with ESCOM, I think, is, which is very important, is that we cannot deal with it, for instance, in the same way that the Germans dealt with their monopolies. Then they said, okay, let's get the renewables and monopolies, and now they've got 26 billion euros debt there. The big difference is those monopolies were not state-owned, and they were not providing over 90% of the electricity to the country. So whether we like it or not, yes, NERSA will lament, and there are many others who will lament, because the fact is the implications of an ESCOM collapse are not just a departmental issue. They actually have an impact on the state, on all of us, and the pensions that Honorable Aitken is talking about. So those are the realities that we must deal with. In terms of what we as a department are doing, I think we have tried through the war room, we have had engagements with the Department of Public Enterprises around the IPP program. In the final analysis, we can call ESCOM here, but the final buck stops with the shareholder. So if the shareholder is not even factoring in the issues that come from NERSA, really there is not that much that we can do in terms of an ESCOM as an entity itself. In terms of the issues around electrification as well and the transfers that we do to ESCOM, I think somebody just said now, as we're coming to the end, the fact of the matter is that those who are opting out are the ones who can afford. It's what I also say to the Germans. I said, you see, you are able now to say, actually, I think I prefer biogas, or another one will say, no, I think I prefer wind. That's what you do when you've got a Toyota and you think it's time to upgrade to a BMW. But if you don't even have a bicycle, you don't actually have options. And the issue is, when we talk about electrification in this country, it is coming from that grid. So we have to actually factor those issues in and say it's just not a matter of saying, well, ESCOM is not it. Those are all the issues that we need to be factoring in. Members will remember that there was an initial discussion which actually came to Parliament around transformation of the electricity sector, and it became a bit of a swear word, the ISMO bill. It came here and it went back. So maybe it would be useful for this committee that deals with electricity to actually sit and workshop and say, is there a proposal that it wants to make to government? Because if there is a review on these SOCs, why should members feel that they can't participate because they are the representatives of the people in this country in the final end? So I think it would be useful to also get inputs from members and not just feel that the only thing is to sit there and be the headmaster, but to actually make proposals on some of these things, because I think the more 10 heads are better than one head. It would actually be most useful, I think. Another aspect on the issue of public participation is something we have had, because I meet regularly with NERSA. We've had discussions around this. And in this issue of the review of ERA, the Regulator Act, we are looking and saying, because the electricity landscape is changing so drastically, we've really moved from 99% ESCOM. We've now got people who are doing self-generation, we've got solar panels on roofs, we've got the example that was given, I think, is it macro, whatever. So you've got a whole lot more generators that are coming into the sector. And that was shown by the fact that in the last round of public consultations on electricity, you had 23,000 submissions. So electricity is no more something that's specialized out there and only for engineers. It's becoming something that people are getting more involved in, have an opinion around, and have an interest, because it impacts very directly on their quality of life. So among the things we are talking about is to say maybe we need to be moving to a stage where NERSA itself needs to be represented in provinces so that they can begin to have this engagement. But obviously, as I say, those are some of the legislative issues that we want to be bringing here to discuss those issues, because it's no more really about one or two. We are now talking about many, many different entities that need to be regulated, then there needs to be proper oversight. The IPPs themselves have begun to show that requirement, that we need to have much more a pulse on the ground than we had in the past. So those are among the changes that we're looking at. And I think among the things that again are said in this committee around the issue of independent power producers, which the IPPs, of course, are not only renewables, it's also the coal and the gas and others. But in terms of the renewables in particular, that we've already had licensed by NERSA in this country, among the things I have been saying to NERSA, they have really been looking at public hearings which have really focused on the service and the costs and the efficiencies around ESCOM. But when you then say, can I have the oversight on the IPP, then when you get the results, it's not actually as rosy as it should be. So we need to also make sure that we can get improvements there. So when we then say a much bigger participation by the private sector, this should help us to actually make sure that we have a much more robust kind of oversight, so that we get the best, the best buck, bang for buck, for the buck. So that was on that issue. And then on the, there was also the question that Honorable Davis was referring to and saying, you know, we've seen how ESCOM is not efficient. Maybe we should be looking at the distribution. But I think, and the transmission, which is also related to what I said in the past, it's difficult. We can put proposals, but it's not an entity that really is directly under us. But we need always to remember that most, if not all, the poor are really being serviced by this ESCOM, and we need to look at this. And in Ntate Matlala, on the electricity going off in the middle of a derby, I can imagine, I'm sure you almost had a heart attack around there, and that would have really been a big loss for us. But among the challenges which I think this committee has also been dealing with from sometime last year is the issue of maintenance of the distribution network. So that one was not a load shedding, which is what we had had in 2014-15, but it's really around the issue of municipalities not adhering to that 10% that should be going to the maintenance of the distribution network. Thank you, Chair.
So when I say a loss for you during the derby, what do you say?
A loss of an honorable member in this committee.
Okay. No, no. Honorable Davis, you can't close my meeting now. We're talking now. Oh, no. Deputy Minister, tell me something. Where's the IRP? I wasn't here last week. I heard somebody said the DG said something. Where is it? And my question is, can we get it back?
Honorable Chairperson, I won't refer to last week because I wasn't here as well. I don't know. There was something about the Majolas last week. Both not here. the new minister, Jeff Radebe, who fortunately for all of us has also been a member of cabinet, so he's aware of that issue. But he has requested that thing be reprocessed and taken to cabinet because he feels there were certain things that were not done. That was one. But secondly, if you look at the press statement that is released after cabinet meeting, it was actually not there. So there seems to have been a difference of understanding whether it was a robust discussion without a conclusion, but we would require all that to be absolutely clear for us. Thank you, Chair.
No, I'm just trying to work out in my mind what we should do next. Before taking my status as a headmaster, I do think that we need to find a different approach to how we conduct oversight so that we can follow through on things and make sure that things move. Because otherwise people come here, they go, and then we call another one, and 6 months down the line, we can't follow through on things.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think the last time when we had a 2-day discussion, so we had identified what are the big issues. Now we just need to prioritize which ones need to be followed up.
Mm.
And then we can have a longer meeting to deal with those matters. So, Honorable David, it's 3 minutes past one.
Mm.
You can talk to me outside.
Yeah.
Okay. You are not the shadow minister here. So the meeting is closed. You can talk to me outside.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. See you on Tuesday.
What's on the agenda next Tuesday?
I'm not taking care of it.